Welcome back to Word on the Hills. With me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guests this week, Shane Joseph and Susan Statham. Is this the first illustrated book that will be published by Blue Denim Press, Shane?
Oh, no, no. We have done the two anthologies, Hill Spirits 1 and 2, has illustrations. It has photographs in it. And we did another book of nonfiction called We All Become Stories by Anne Elizabeth Carson, which had, illustrations
in it. Now
so
it had
so we have had quite a bit of experience with these.
But can you see the press branching out into publishing graphic novels in the future?
I hope not. Not in my life. But, I never say never. I know that tastes are changing. The graphic novel is also a lot more evolved than it used to be in my time when I was a child. But, I'm a novelist. And we set out at Blue Denim Press to publish short stories and novels. And we'd like to see that art form continue and not to try and pick up another one, because I think the graphic novel is a separate art form unto itself.
But perhaps you'll publish more with illustrations.
Hmm? Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like audiences like the combination of the two. As long as, the illustration is there not to overpower the novel, but to enhance
it. Right. So how would you classify the novel that you've written, and who will be your audience, do you think?
That's going to be an interesting one, because I'd like to think that the audience would be, people in my demographic and older. The 50-plus. I do know that a lot of young people have read my book and have liked it, and they don't really mind the strong language and the violence. And it could even reach down to a younger audience who are interested in history. It is about conquest. Conquest is hardwired. We like to conquer our immediate environment, whether that's keeping our rooms clean, our houses clean, our desks clean, or conquering other countries, which is what happens in this particular case. We have two guys in the modern day who are out to conquer a woman. They're both in love with her, and they end up destroying her. And then you have the two conquistadors, Pizarro and Almagro, who went and captured Peru, and they destroyed Peru. And this goes on. 500 years ago they did it, and now, 500 years later, we're still doing the same thing.
So, Susan, the illustrations for the book are in black and white. What medium did you decide to use?
Well, I decided to use pencil, graphite. Varying hardness of pencil, it will give you the darker line or the lighter line. My hope was that they would look as though they had actually been done on the page of the book that you're reading, rather than a copy of the pencil. And I think the pencil lends itself very nicely to that.
Certainly the one you've brought in looks like the real drawing. It's lovely. So tell us how you chose the scenes you've illustrated and why they were particularly attractive as subjects for your drawings.
As I read them, for me, I'm reading about Francisco Pizarro. The first thing I want to know is, what did he look like? And I'm thinking that other readers will feel the same. So as various characters are mentioned, those that really play a big role, those are the ones that I research to try and find what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
One of the excerpts has a dusty horse and rider, and that stuck out for me. I thought, oh, I can see that. And the way, Shane described it so well, I thought that would be, and now I've got to research what they wore at that time and reproduce that.
That's quite a lot of research, because you have all the horses' accoutrements as well, right?
Yes.
They're different.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a lot longer deal before we had the internet. The internet really helps with this sort of thing.
Yes, for sure. So, can you read us another excerpt from your story, Shane?
Sure. I read from the old story in the first half, and I think I'll read from the new story, which is the main story, in the second half. And I have to apologize and caution people that there's some strong language used here, so it's the character's language. His name is George, and he's the Pizarro lookalike in our present day, and he's accompanied by Jimmy, who's the Almagro lookalike. And Jimmy is the one who's narrating this part of the story. This is when they are climbing up to Machu Picchu. Now, these two modern-day conquistadors are out to conquer something, and they're trying to conquer Machu Picchu by climbing up there. And they're in their 50s, so they're not young spring chickens, but they're trying to do it. And you know that Machu Picchu is over 12,000 feet above sea level, and you're faced with all sorts of altitudinal problems, which we will find out. The trail began through flat country. Mountains beckoned in the distance. So did the rain cloud. We had to go up and down two mountains. The first one, Dead Woman's Pass, being the tallest, at nearly 14,000 feet above sea level. During the first couple of hours, we passed villages and fields. Some sprung up around volcanic rocks that had rolled down the mountains during earthquakes. The threat of imminent extinction hung in the air, but the attitude of shrugging off disaster and carrying on with a smile held true in the faces of the locals who waved us past. My stomach had settled after leaving Cusco, but I felt weak and was glad for the flat terrain. I was also reassured that we had opted for our four Quechua men to carry our tents and cookware for us. They nimbly skipped ahead along the ancient stones of the trail, and Valdez advised us that we would next see them at the camp that night, where our tents would be made and dinner simmering. After a brief stop for a sandwich lunch, we began the climb. We were only traveling 4 kilometers that day, but it felt like 40. The steps that made up the trail from this point were broken and uneven, and steep and narrow in places. The rain started to come down midway. At first it was refreshing from the sweat of the trek, but as we ascended, it turned cold. George fell behind, and Valdez kept pace with him, bringing up the rear, and I was on my own for most of the section of the climb. I pulled on a sweater that got quickly soaked, threw on a poncho, and increased my pace. The light started to diminish at the halfway point. Turning around, I discovered that I was alone on the trail. Only the steps heading steeply down indicated where I had come from. I heard faint voices below. Valdez and George were somewhere out of sight. When I stopped, the voices amplified. Satisfied, I continued. My muscles began to cramp. Raising a leg onto the next stone step became difficult, then impossible. I started to panic. Should I turn back? My water bottle was long empty. Besides, the Diamox took it all out anyway in frequent passing of urine. But just like the night before, I wanted to keep going. The sheer rush of adrenaline, the fact that I was doing something I had never attempted before, and the fact that George, who was in worse condition than me, was behind, was motive enough to keep moving, despite the freezing limbs and groans that were by now unshakable companions on the journey. I had a sudden burst of anxiety, not for me, but for George. He was never going to make it this far in his condition. Marijuana was no antidote to altitude sickness. I began to slow down. The cramps in my legs had spread to my upper body, and every step was now a struggle. Under my sweater, poncho, and the two other layers of clothes, I was sweating in this cold, damp Andean climate. The voices behind me got louder. I caught sight of Valdez with his hands widely gesticulating, perhaps spinning another Inca story, fabricated or real, we tourists would never know. But it was George I was focused on. He had his head down, buttressed against the strong wind that had started down the mountain. Every time he faltered, he strained with renewed effort to keep going. "The camp is not far," Valdez called out, quickening his step. "We have to move fast before we get polo. How do you say, chicken, no?" He was grinning as he passed me. "Vamonos, amigos." I held back until George drew near. "How's it going?" I wanted to hold him, give him what strength was still left in my body. For once, he did not look so indestructible. "I've got such a fucking headache," he mumbled and lurched past me, his backpack bumping and nearly toppling me off the narrow steps. "Gato vamanos!" He had fallen into a drone, high head down, plodding on. "You heard the man. Keep going, one foot in front of the other." "Oh, God, it hurts like hell. Vamanos, amigos, vamanos!" We fell into a chant, and it was deliriously exhilarating. We were beyond tiredness. Somewhere ahead was a camp with four Inca descendants waiting for us with a hot meal, and we were not going to be chicken shit gringos about to polo out. "Gotta vamanos! Gotta vamanos!" Making our hiking sticks strike the stones to the beat of our chanting had suddenly become the most immediate challenge. Just when we saw the blue tents over the tree line and the smell of cooking wafted down to us, George began throwing up. Clumps of yellow bile adding to the smoke from the campfire, spewing by me and floating down the mountain in the wind. He staggered up two more steps and fell forward in a heap. I reached for him and held him in my arms. Sorry, old buddy. Didn't mean to be rude. His bloodshot eyes were trying to look humorous, but he was done in. He was also burning up under his clothes. Hang on to me. I unhitched our backpacks and managed to haul him up onto his feet again, slung one of his arms over my shoulder, and we staggered the rest of the way. The men were running down to meet us as we rounded the bend into view of the camp. Bring the backpacks, I gasped. I've got George. Walders looked worried after we had cleaned up as best as we could with water from the cooking pots and laid George down inside his sleeping bag in the main tent. He has the altitude sickness. Then we need to get a doctor. I had forgotten my own creaking bones. Valdez looked dubious. Señor, it is one day walking back and 2 days walking forward and nothing in between. So you decide. We'll go back then. No fucking way, came the impassioned voice from inside the tent. Valdez shrugged. You heard. Perhaps when he sleeps tonight, if he does not die, he will be better tomorrow. We will give him lots of coca tea, but no alcohol and no marijuana, okay? Make sure you take all that away from him, not even cigarettes.
Well, it was really exciting. So many thanks to you, Shane, and to you, Susan. It was interesting to hear about the illustrations. And when will the new novel be released, and where will be listeners be able to buy a copy, Shane?
Oh, you'll be able to buy a copy from all online distributors like Amazon and Kobo, and I'm sure it'll be the book will be racked with retailers, available through Blue Denim Press, through our website. The book will be launched in November of this year. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. So, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.